The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
And welcome back to another episode of Asian Not Asian Podcast, the podcast where two Asian guys not from Asia talk about American issues no American cares about. I'm your host, Fumi Abe.
And I'm Mike Nguyen.
Today is Saturday, April 24th. We're coming at you live from an undisclosed location. We cannot tell you. If you're listening to this on your phones right now, please take a screenshot and post it on Instagram stories. Tag us at Asian Not Asian Pod. And if you're listening to this on your iPhones, on your Apple podcast app, please leave a review. It helps us so much. So yeah. And if you say something funny, we'll read it on the podcast. So that's some incentive for you. Just real quick, Mike, just wanted to let you know that I got my second dose. I got my second dose.
Second dose, baby. Which one you got? You got Pfizer or Moderna?
I got Moderna.
Moderna, and, baby.
You know what's funny? Everybody was saying the side effects are gonna be crazy, and I got it and I was fine. And I saw this tweet that was like, waiting for the second. It was like something like waiting for the second dose to hit like an edible or something.
Oh yeah.
Because nothing was happening to me, and I was like, dude, everybody's freaking out for nothing. And then I woke up the next morning when I had to work, and it was fucking hell, bro. It was hell, man. And I probably shouldn't be saying this on air because there are probably vaccine skeptics out there. Shout out to my Vietnamese American friends out there.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. you know what's crazy to me is that everybody's like, oh my God, it was hell. And it was, it's like you all never been sick before. And then everybody's
do you get sick a lot? Because I don't.
We don't. You know why? Because we're adults now. You know, we have good immune systems. You know, why you get sick as a kid all the time, right?
Right.
I don't know. And we just forgot how sick we get. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I feel like there are some people who like always has a cold or something. I don't get sick that often, so it like felt extra bad.
I feel like straight up flus though. You know, I haven't had the flu in a long time where you're like, I'm sick like a dog, and I think the last time legit I had to call out sick was like, I was like 25 and I was like legit sick. I did like lie, you know, I was like throwing up and everything like that. But since then, you know, we don't get sick no more. So it's almost, if anything, guys, if you want to relive your youth, go ahead and get that second shot.
If you want to remember what it's like back in the early 2010s.
Back in the day. Yeah. If you miss throwing up and shitting your pants, you take that second shot and you go, the 90s.
Dude, just put on a little bit of Ja Rule, you know? Bust out your earbook. Get that second dose.
Pull out your yearbook, man. You know? Put a CD of NSYNC on. Put on a tiny fedora, maybe a trucker hat, and just be like, "Yo, man, 2003. Ooh,
that was a good time.
I'm sick like a dog." It's Moderna, baby.
All right, let's get to our Patreon shoutouts. We have a Patreon, and if you donate, we try to guess your ethnicity based on your last name on air. So please join us at patreon.com/asian.asianpod. First Patreon person of the week, we got Yael Pete. P-E-E-T.
That's our this is our guest, right? Our
She's done the podcast before. She is, I know exactly what she is. She's Jewish Brazilian, but she
here's
cooks
the thing.
Japanese food like
but
a
she
motherfucker.
Cooks Japanese food. Here's the thing though, is if I didn't know Yael Pete's ethnicity because she was on the show, I would just think this is like a vegetable. This is a vegetable. Yael Pete has given us money. Shouts to legumes or whatever.
That braised Yael Pete, so good.
Mmm. Thank you, Yael. I know, you know, you're doing your thing, so it's awesome. Thank you.
Next, we got Chloe. Just Chloe.
I think this is the Chloe we saw the other day, but I'm going to say Chinese.
I don't remember that. I don't remember seeing a Chloe.
Remember Chloe? I don't want to say her full name, but like Chloe, she was like lying in the bed. That makes it sound real weird, but
on the Zoom?
In the Zoom.
You made it sound like you and I were in the bedroom. I would have remembered that.
Someone was.
Hey, you get that if you give us $50 a month. So just remember, that's also a tier. We're gonna say Chinese or Taiwanese. Juliana Chang, Chang,
Chinese.
Aaron Nin.
Yes, this is my old editor from a magazine I used to write for. I learned everything that's good that I do right, I learned from her, and everything wrong I learned from Fumi. So this is the anti Fumi. Thank you, Aaron. And I know what she is, but what do you think she is?
I think she is Mongolian.
Hmm. Huh. Okay.
Am I wrong?
I think so.
Okay. What like is it. She? Did you say what, are, what
she's
she
Vietnamese.
Is?
She's Vietnamese. Oh, okay, the trick is that H. You throw an H into a randomly into a name. It's Vietnamese.
Oh, got it. Okay. Yeah. Then we have Stephen Cao. K-A-O.
Cao. I'm saying
Chinese. And that concludes our Patreon shoutouts for the week. Again, if you want to get a shout out on the podcast, go to patreon.com/AsianNotAsianPod. And then we'll try to guess your ethnicity on air. Story of the week. What do we got this week, Mike? What's happening?
Yo, man, I've been out there in the streets, you know? I've been a little slut. That's what I have. That's what I've been saying. That's what people say all the time now.
That's what Mike calls jogging.
That's right, yeah. Well, that's what everybody always says. Everybody's like, I'm going out, I'm being a little slut. And I'm just like, what did you do? And like, I went to the grocery store. I'm like, okay, I guess that's the level where we are as a community, that our sluttiness is just doing normal things like going to the bodega, which is what I've been doing. You know?
So, like, you've been a very, very good boy during this quarantine. And I don't know if it's because you're old or if it's because your dad was in the military. I don't know what the fuck it is, but you you were very prudent during, like, you didn't see anybody. You didn't go to any, like, secret parties. You didn't do any indoor shows. So, like, where have you, and I know you were joking about the grocery stores, where have you gone indoors that's been, or, like, what have you been doing that's a little bit more, like, you know, human interaction forward that you think is a little naughty?
Yeah, I went and I did an indoor show. I stood outside until I was supposed to go in, but then I went inside, and then I did that, and that was fire. And then I did some jiu-jitsu. I went to a jiu-jitsu class and had this dude breathing on me. I was breathing on him. It was awesome.
And you know what's so funny? I can tell, that's so funny that you were like standing outside at the stand-up comedy show because you're like, I gotta be careful. And then the next day, you're just breathing some down some guy's neck, just like licking his sweat off his fucking back.
I was, and it was so nice. I realized I must have been completely shredded before the pandemic because I was so sore the next day. I was like sore, like the back of my neck was sore. My jaw hurt. I don't know why. I don't remember that. Maybe something happened. Who knows?
something
happened. My jaw hurt.
Yo, let's explore that. Can we unpack that part?
Yeah. I was being a little slut, all right. It was crazy, bro. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I feel like you know what? It's like you say that I've been really good, but I've just been doing what the CDC said. And it's just like, wow, you've been following doctor's advice.
Well, because that's very un-American. Americans very fuck you, right? Like you were doing what most people in Japan were doing, where they're like, they watch the news and they go, okay, we're not going to do those things because we're not allowed to.
Right.
But I feel like most Americans don't do that. You know what I mean?
Well, that's why we killed 500,000 of us. So, shouts to America. It's very American to kill other Americans.
That's true. That's the most American thing.
Oh, my God. You guys don't even know. You guys don't even know how true that is. Read a book. Okay, so that's what I've been doing. How about you, Fumi? How you been?
Have I been naughty? I mean, I've been pretty, you know, I make fun of you a little bit, but I've been pretty good. I guess I've been seeing people indoors, but like only if they've gotten recently tested or like, I had one bad naughty experience that happened to me that was like some open micer booked me on a show that was inside and some dude's fucking apartment.
Oh.
And I didn't realize people were going to be like unmasked, and I didn't realize it was going to be like, they said apartment, so I thought it was going to be rooftop. The whole thing, it was an ambush. And the show wasn't even good because there were no real people. It was just all comedians.
Oh no. So that's like, the worst part.
Oh yeah, it was like they really need to fuck. I don't know what the fuck that was about. I was very upset actually because if I had gotten sick from that and like had to go to the ICU or something, like I would have to lie to people about my death. You know what I mean?
No, see, I'd be like, yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. I feel that like getting sick, the reason if you end up in the hospital, it's kind of like how people ask you how did you end up in jail. You better have a good reason. You better have like a full reason. You can't be like, oh, I got sick because I was doing an open mic with these open micers. Whack. That's like the same thing as I'm in jail for crosswalking.
Yeah. Your ass is done. If you say that, you're getting fucked. Get out of here. For sure.
You got to have
for
a cool story about like, oh, I got in a fight with some cops. That's cool.
Right.
So, yeah.
Hell yeah, man. Well, let's I want to talk about this with our guest today. See how naughty he's been. This week's theme is, are 90s flashbacks Asian? Are not an Asian. Our guest this week, he's a comedian / perhaps a musician. We read on the internet. We're not really sure.
Yeah,
this could be a different guest or person. This could be
completely wrong. This guy,
I know, but we're gonna have to ask him. I don't know. He's a comedian. He's the co-host of the War Report podcast with Shalewa Sharp. And he's an amazing storyteller, guys. Just YouTube this guy. He's got stories like it's all over YouTube, God. And they have thousands of views, and it's so great. He's an amazing storyteller. So guys, give it up for the hilarious Gastor Almonte.
What's good, fellas?
Hey.
How y'all doing?
How you doing?
Good.
Man?
Thank you so much for making time for us,
yo,
man.
Thank you for having me. I've been a long time fan. You know what I mean? So I'm real hyped to be chilling here with the Anal Squad. Kind of digging it.
You are an anal. Yo, what's going on with that?
I dig it. Like, I feel like, you know, when people do things that are dope, you know, you should check it. And I feel like y'all do dope stuff. So I'll be in y'all IG on the regular. I'll be like, yo, that's dope. I dig this clip. I'll be starring stuff. I thought Mike was big timing me for a minute. Like, I was like, yo, like, y'all are really killing it in the podcast games. I can't even get a follow back from my man.
Oh, like, shit.
I was posting mad comments on Twitter like, yo, this is fire. And I would like Mike's joint. I retweet him and Mike would be like, true, and not do nothing else. I'm like, what? I see how it is out here, man. This podcast game is different, you know?
Now I gotta go back in my timeline and like all the things you've liked in mine. This is crazy.
But yeah, I've been rocking with y'all for a hot minute, B. I dig what y'all do, man. Real talk. And you know, just like, you know, my whole thing has always been like highlighting you know, BIPOC and immigrant stories, and y'all do that from y'all perspective, and I think it's important. So yeah, man, I've been a long time fan of what y'all do, B.
So you like sent us a message one time and you're like, I'm always learning from your shit, man. What are you learning from us, man? Because I feel like we're learning from you.
We're learning from
you, know?
Yeah, you're always learning from us. Yeah.
Well, I don't know what you could be possibly learning from us.
Dude, it's just like there's so many nuances that like people sleep on, and there's like there's little moments in the life of each immigrant culture that they deal with that I don't know about. Like, and I like there was a few times where like y'all be like the first time you had like a white girlfriend or something. I love those type of stories. I want to hear what that's like for other people besides me, because I remember those moments. Like, real talk, to this day I remember the first white person I saw, like that I acted like I that was a thing in
the
my
first
neighborhood.
Time you ever
active?
Saw one?
You said active?
Like, yo.
You remember the moment you saw one?
The first time I saw like an actual active, like in-person white person that like wasn't in a movie or in my school. Like, it wasn't a teacher. It was just like in the field, like in the world.
Out in the wild. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the wild.
That
like
was a moment.
The safari. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was just like that. Like, she just came out the car.
Their natural habitat.
Dude,
yes.
Wow.
She pulled up on our block. She stood up and she looked both ways and she like instantly knew, yup, this ain't it. And she got back in the car and drove off. And like, yo, what's wild is like it was such an occasion on my neighborhood that like we use it as like a landmark. Like, we would be like, like, people would be like, yo, you remember when such and such, you know, whatever happened? Oh, that was two
Where
months
were
after
you?
The white girl. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? It was like
Those
that.
Are, that's what it is. It's like, it's Hurricane Sandy, you know, 9/11, and that white girl coming out of the car. Remember that shit? That shit was crazy.
Dude,
where were you?
Major moments, B. East New York history right there.
Gastor, before we start talking about, you know, your sort of your thing. I mean, have you been a little slut going into doing shows and getting
indoors
out there, or what?
During the quarantine? Nah, not at all, B. Nah, you know, I'm a dad, I got two kids, I got a wife, like and my parents live on my same block, so I see them pretty regularly. So just like responsibility wise, like I couldn't justify that. So very early on, we kind of just made the decision like, hey, you know, I only like the 80 of y'all anyway. So, you know, why am I going to see anyone else?
I feel that's true. I feel with the quarantine, people have been talking about that. It's like you really just kind of like shrank down all these people that you normally ran into and just kept it to here are the people I'm really going to try to see. I see basically like four of my really good friends. And then I have like also a couple that I talk to, you know, doing like kind of virtual hangouts because they're not near me. And then Fumi's also on that tier of like, I like him enough where I would see him online, but I don't want to go to his house.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what I'm saying. Digital Fumi all day. If you'd have been on my block, fuck Fumi. Like, right back to the chat.
Get out here, Fumi.
What you doing over here, B?
Oh, God.
Yeah, nah.
No, I love it. I love it.
I kept it like, yo, this is the circle. The only person outside the circle I saw was Poppy from the corner store. And that's it. You know, everybody else is just like people directly like, oh, you made me or I made you. Like, that was essentially the recipe. Like, I made you.
Who came out of whose balls? That's the only one. Everybody has to be related to that. Well, I mean, I want to talk to you about, like, you know, you're from East New York, and we were talking about where that is because, hey, Fumi and I, we're gentrifiers. We've been here a long time. And it's cool and all, but, like, and to me, it's crazy because I live in Bed-Stuy, and I walk around sometimes, and I'm like, oh, my God, there's this famous thing here, or this is what I know from hip hop or whatever, but I'm walking around looking for like a matcha tea, you know? I'm just like, where's the matcha tea at? You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, this is a really cool thing where this is where Nas shot this really cool commercial. But then, you know, I'm looking for dim sum, you know, like that's what I'm bringing to the neighborhood. But you know, Gastor, I mean, I don't know, like what was it like growing up? You know, where first of all, tell our fans where you're from, because people don't know what East New York is. And we kind of know what that means, but like, you know, give us the rundown on that.
Yeah. For people like outside of New York, you know, the borough of Brooklyn has like a lot of subset areas. So Bed-Stuy is one of them. Williamsburg is probably one of the more well-known ones because of like HBO shows like Girls and all that. East New York is one of them that like still to this day is kind of like stayed the same from probably like its 90s demo. It's mostly Black and Latino community. It's probably also really well known for its constantly being the place where immigrants, brown immigrants, would first go to. So, like, right now you're starting to see a huge influx of, like, Middle Eastern people come in. Prior to that, it was the transition from Black to Latino. Before that, it was, like, a huge Italian community. All the Goodfellas movies, that's all in East New York. You know, matter of fact, they shot a Goodfellas in Astoria, but they put up a fake East New York picking sign that's still up to this day over there. So if you're walking in Queens in Astoria, they shot it in, but they're pretending he's still over there. East New York's kind of been a place where like a lot of people move into New York. They go there first because it's affordable. They transition to other neighborhoods. East New York is the most eastern part of Brooklyn. That's why we don't have gentrifiers yet. They still haven't, come
right
over.
We were, Fumi and I were arguing about whether or not there's a gentrifier out there. I'm saying there's probably one or two very I would say optimistic white people maybe who are there who are like, yo, they're gonna love yoga, and they're out there trying to do that. But
some early birds.
Are you starting to see that?
You got to, right? Yeah, I'm sure there's one cupcake shop.
Yeah. We don't got this. We don't got cupcake. We got a juice place now.
Okay.
Yeah, we got like a dude outside with like he's white with braids.
He's trying to fit in.
Yeah,
he's like, hey, man.
I know y'all. Yeah, like I'm cool. You know, and he has like fruits and vegetables, and he sells. I don't even know if it's a store. I just think it's a dude that just stands in front of the store. But he has fruits and vegetables, and he sells smoothies to people getting on the train. So he's the first sign I've seen of someone that's not from here.
Okay. Now, is this like, was that something the neighbors were talking about when that juice stop, shop, you know?
Yeah, it's a new thing. It's just like there's no vegetable places here in general. So, like, that was the thing. It's like, okay, we got healthy foods here. That's great. You know, we never saw it. And then it kind of, like, opened the door to other people opening up vegetable stores that were more to, like, our palate, which was dope. Like, then when we saw that people were open to the idea, there was, like, people that opened the spot called, like, the Conuco, which is, like, a Latino fruit and vegetable stand. So, like, it was dope because, like, this white boy was bringing vegetables I never heard of from this country. They were bringing vegetables I never heard of from my home country. So I was learning about my parents' culture and about the rest of this country all at once, all because of this. It was a game changer. Like, my block was strictly, like, bodegas, and yeah. Crown Fries before that. And like, no exaggeration, like there's three Crown Fried Chickens from my house.
Oh, shit.
It's crazy. And I got one, two, three, four. I got seven stores, seven bodegas within a block of my house.
Damn. Mm.
So,
I thought you,
yeah. So this was a huge shift in the availability of what was there. So, you know, this is one of the benefits of that stuff, right? You get cool stuff. I don't necessarily want cupcakes, but I like the juice guy.
one of my favorite jokes that you have about East New York is, you know, and you could talk about this a little bit more. You know, you joke that, you know, because it's not, it hasn't always been the safest place. People don't want to stay out for so long. So when you go shopping, you have to be efficient so you can get a lot of things at one store. And you say you went to the store to get a raw chicken, like, I don't know, I forget, something else, yeah. And then like a used air conditioner or something, right? AC unit or something like that.
That's still my favorite store.
Yeah, that's such a, you know, I've never been there, but when I heard that joke, I was like, oh, that's such like a nuanced look into, you know, East New York culture and what that kind of might be. Can you talk a little bit about that joke and just kind of like, you know, how much of truth is in that bit?
Yeah, man. Thank you for that, man. Yeah, I just talk about how, like, you know, I went in there, I got a raw chicken, a baseball glove, and a used air conditioner. <That's right>. And I said that I actually went in for a t-shirt, and, you know, I didn't get what I wanted, but I got what I needed. So yeah, it's pretty accurate. Like, admittedly, I didn't get them all on one trip, but like, those are all things I've bought at the same store,
at the same,
like,
store, right.
The same spot. And like, to me, like, you know what I always find interesting about that store is that everyone calls it whatever they go there the most for. You know, like for me, I'll be telling my mom, like, have you been to the clothing store this week? Yeah, they got hats and belts this week. And my dad calls it the appliance store. You know, he's like, yeah, I just got a hammer. I got some wrenches the other day. Like, it's whatever you need it to be. I don't know how he fits it in that 10 by 12 box, yeah. But everything you want this is guy, in that space.
It sounds like Jeff Bezos to me, man. It's just Amazon.
Yeah.
He's Amazon. It's just East New York hood Amazon. That's all it is. Anything you want, we got you.
Shit is dope, man. I love the place, man. But he's been open since I've been here. It's just there. And, you know, I show up, and whatever I need, he has it or he gets it. He's like, oh, I got you, Poppy. Come back tomorrow. You know? And we good.
Damn.
Yeah, I love those dynamics. It just, I feel like, you know, stores like that are like real indicative of like immigrant neighborhoods. I lived in Flushing, Queens for 2 years. It's the only time I lived in a non black and brown area of like Brooklyn. And I felt like they had similar dynamics there. I found it beautiful. Mm. Like,
yeah,
it would be a store that like solved all the problems of that community. Like, yes. You would see like, yo, come here. We'll help you with like travel plans. We'll help you exchange money. We could get you translators. Your kid needs tutors for SATs. Like, I was like, yo, how do y'all all do this shit? Like, it's one dude behind the counter. You do everything? You know, and then, you know, I started comparing it to my dudes and like, oh, it's the same idea. I just think that like, essentially like someone in the community figures out that like, I'm like a liaison for these people. You know, like they don't necessarily have an opportunity with their work-life balance to leave the neighborhood. So my job is to bring all those things to them here. And I just think it's dope that somebody solves that.
Right. That's why I'm walking around. I'm waiting for someone to solve my matcha tea needs. You know, I'm waiting for that. Where's that guy? You know, I also love too that we're talking about gentrification, and Fumi and I were like, yeah, you know, you guys must have like a cupcake shop or yoga studio. And Gastor is literally like, hey, we just got vegetables. We just got that. Tight. Have you heard about these things? This is crazy.
Dude, I'll be hype, yo. My wife be like sending me out there with a new vegetable to go buy. And like, I'm reading about it. And like, I'm like, my kids who know about it before me, because they talk about vegetables in school now. And like, so they're like, yo, dad, check out the picture so you know what you're looking for. So like, they all teaching me. They're like, yeah, this is what we talked about in class. This is good. It has vitamin like D and B. And then I go in there super hype, like, yo, I'm here for parsley, I think is what they call it. Let's go. real talk, I didn't know what asparagus was probably till like 2006. Like I didn't know.
Oh,
I
my
like,
God.
Oh God, if you tell me, I swear to God, if we could time travel, if you ask me asparagus, any of the 4 years in high school, I went to a prep school, commuted from Brooklyn to Queens. I was around white folk. I swear all 2,000 white folk at that school kept that a secret from me. I never heard asparagus in my life. I found out asparagus through like several Google and YouTube expeditions well into my 20s.
I'm just imagining people instead of passing around blunts, just like, hey man, don't tell Gastor about this, man. We got some asparagus in the bathroom, man.
Real talk.
Yo, you wrapping in some bacon, it's mad good.
Oh shit. Have you had that? You know, I mean, it does make sense because vegetables in a lot of ways is like a fucking luxury. And if you get, I mean, fucking think about Asian people with Asian pears. Gastor, have you had an Asian pear?
Ooh.
Oh my God, Gastor. Bro. Holy
that should
fuck.
Be a thing on this podcast, Mike. We should give our guests Asian pears if they're not Asian.
You know what? I would be down right with now. That. Write it down.
It'll blow your mind.
More and more. You can get it. It used to be really hard to find. Gastor, I'm just going to warn you. They're very expensive.
Okay.
Like wildly expensive, but they're amazing.
They're also bigger than your average apple. So it's expensive, but it's like 1.5 times the size of an apple.
Yeah.
So just,
it's
know,
much okay. bigger. It's really big. And it's like a delicious pear, but you know, like, you know, that shit's, vegetables is like, that's really hard to, you have to eat it fresh. So you got to ship it in. And I remember in the Bay Area, the pinnacle of fanciness was this store. It's called Berkeley Bowl, and it's still there, and it's like this super, it's like Trader Joe's for rich people. It's like even on another level of vegetableness. And it's like that's where all like the hoity-toity annoying Bay Area people would always go and get their vegetables. But I think there's such a thing, there's vegetable capital. Okay, forget NFTs. All right, let's not get into NFTs, let's not get into crypto. Vegetables, where that get some Asian pears, bury that somewhere. It'll be worth something.
It, like to me, like vegetable access is like the first sign that like your minority group has like really made it here.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Like they're like really like a part of the community, because like the reason that like, you know, there's no vegetables or a lack of it in my neighborhood is because when the minority first gets here, they're still trying to like acclimate to this culture. So they don't know the vegetables that are accessible in this country. They're not familiar with them, so they're not going to cook those. And they still haven't figured out how to bring over theirs, which they're all familiar with. And then slowly they figure out first the ones that are here that are most like the ones they know. And then they also figure out how to transport theirs here. And we get like a beautiful new blend. You know what I mean? So that's starting to happen here now. But yeah, like it's one of my favorite things to do, actually, when I go to other areas. Like to see what
eat their vegetables?
Nah, yeah. I ain't gonna eat them, man. But I like to see them, you know.
I'm gonna look at it, take a picture with it, make a selfie.
I ain't get to 300 pounds by accident, fool me. Like I ain't eating that.
You got that from the same ground fried chickens.
That's so interesting. You bring that up because like I was thinking about that movie Minari.
Oh
that
yeah,
that was about vegetables.
That's
that was
about
vegetables.
Yeah, dude. I'm telling you, it's the thing, man. Like I feel like if you figure out. Like what the local like if you show me the vegetables, you could probably figure out the community. Like the same game y'all do with the names with the Patreon people. I feel like you could do the same thing with the vegetables. Show me the vegetables that you eat, I could guess your nationality type
thing. Oh, that's so damn. Oh man, welcome to Asia Not Asian, the podcast about vegetables. Who knew? Who fucking knew? Yeah, this is a weird episode. This is cool though. I do want to just kind of like, you know, I want to move to some other things, but I did have a question just as far as like I've listened to your stories. You have this amazing story on This Is Not Happening about you growing up in East New York, and we're about the same age. So like, for me, again, everything I get from about what New York was like in the 90s and stuff like that was from like, you ever watched that show New York Undercover?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, okay, this is what New York is like, or the cover of that Capone and Noriega, you know, cover. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just like, this is what it's like. Everybody's always wearing desert camo, standing in front of a building that's on fire, and this is just East New York. And I just wanted to know, because you know, what are your sort of like big memories for you? Because like, For someone like me and Fumi, it's like, hey, man, we're going to Kmart. New Kmart opened up. Boom, we're there. That's our thing. And we're posing in front of that like we're rappers. But for you, what was like your big signpost as a kid? Like this, hey, I got to get the raw chicken. Got to get whatever it is, you know, got to see the white lady who got lost, you know, whatever.
Yeah, like, I mean, for me, like the neighborhood, like in general, it's weird. Like, because when you're in it, you don't view it as like those signs of toughness or danger. The first time like I associated East New York and Brooklyn as that is when I was starting to get old enough to leave. Like when I would go to nicer neighborhoods and I would see people's reaction to it. When you're inside, all those things that like people view as tough, like the Tims and the baggy clothes and the abandoned building, those are like fond memories for me. You know,
right, yeah.
Yeah, like I this dude, this is an event. When I was recording my album, I took my photographer to my neighborhood to take pictures there. And like I was telling him stories like with a smile about my childhood. And like he was petrified, dude. He's like, what the fuck are you talking about? He's like, we can't do this. Like so like as a game, and I don't know if this I'll say it and y'all tell me if this is like normal.
It's not.
So yeah.
No, your opening has been the raw chicken air conditioner I just saw at Asparagus when I was 28 years old. So pretty sure it's gonna be abnormal.
Yeah, like so like we used to, like the older kids when they had to like watch the younger kids, what they would do is like we played this game where like they would put mice from like the street into socks, and then we had to like swing the sock and throw it into the abandoned building across the street. We had to get it through the window hole, right? And
you said mice?
Yeah, like it would be mice and rats and whatever was like on the street. They would catch it.
You catch it,
right? And then they would put it in a sock, and they would swing it so that the mouse was in the sock. It was still alive. So, like, if you stop swinging it, the mouse is going to climb on you. You don't want that, right? And then the goal was to throw it through the abandoned building across the street, through the window.
Is this your Mario Kart? I mean, what?
It's you amazing, guys, dude. So, you got 1 point if you got it through the window. You got 5 points if you scared the people that were sleeping inside, like the crackheads. If they woke up, they were like, oh, shit, there's a mouse. You got 5 points. You killing it, you know? And I'm like 7. I don't even got the arm strength for that. But it was a fun, you know, thing to try. And then you learn things by doing that. Like, right off the bat, I didn't know that mice could kind of run on walls. They could do that, you know?
Huh.
When you miss, they come out the sock. And they, like, run down the wall.
Run out the sock. Yeah, yeah, okay.
I love how you're, like, trying to, like, humanize this. Like, no, we learned. Yo, like, yeah, it was an education.
Yeah, this is his good memory, okay?
Yeah, like, it was a fun game. Yo, I had a blast.
For other people, they're like, oh, yeah, you know, I used to summer in Nantucket, and there was a beautiful beach, and, you know, we played N64, and Gastor here is just throwing mice up into walls.
Dude, I had a blast doing it. Because it's like, to me, it was like, A, you know, I was like, oh, this is cool because this is the first time the older kids kind of like took to you. You know, so like if you had like, oh, yo, Gastor, yo, that dude got like 3 mics through the window. Yo, he a real one. You know, that whole rest of the week, like you good with the OGs on the block. Everybody rock with you. You know, so like it was a thing for me because it kind of like raised your status on the block. The older teenagers like you. They would tell people about you. It was a thing.
Yeah.
I love, because you always talk about street cred in your comedy. I didn't realize this is what you're talking about. Yep. There are no guns. we're talking like, when you say being risky, you're talking about risking of getting rabies the whole time. It wasn't really violence. It was really just
non-violence at all.
Crazy. Yeah. Also, I feel like a white person saw you guys doing this, moved back to Ohio, and created cornhole, because it sounds very similar.
Like, hey, you know what?
Cornhole.
What if we just got rid of the mice part? But there's still a hole you have to throw.
Visionary.
Maybe you'd be. Have you played cornhole?
I've not seen.
You would be amazing at it. I'm thinking.
Why are you so good, man?
Hey, you're so good at this. Yeah, hey, man. This ball is this. Yeah, this bag isn't even trying to crawl up the wall or anything. You know,
it's easy. It's not alive. It doesn't move. minor leagues here, baby. Come on.
This is bullshit.
So funny, dude.
But yeah, like, you know, like, there was a, like, there was an awareness of the fact that that stuff existed, though. Like, I knew that, like, you know, though the older kids also, some of them unfortunately had to get involved with, you know, edgier things and a more dangerous lifestyle on occasion. But it there was still, like, a family aspect of it, you know? And so I never felt those things. I also felt like there was a protectiveness of it. It wasn't like those things were idolized, per se. Like, you know, when I came home every trimester, I would have to show my report cards to the dealers. And oh, if shit. I had a B, they would give me $5. If I had an A, they would give me $10. You know?
Dang.
And yeah, so like, this was like a thing for the whole block. If you had a report card day, you would walk on down from PS345. And as soon as you turn down on picking in Montauk, they would be looking at every kid's report card. Oh, yo, he killed it. My man made $60. Boom. You know?
Wow.
So it was a thing. And then by like maybe like fifth, sixth grade, if you've been doing that for like 5-6 years, they won't even let you be involved with their business. Cause they're like, really? Nah, that kid has to go to school. Like, he can't be doing what we do. He's doing his thing in class. So like, oh my God. I would get like sent inside if they knew they were going to do dirt that night.
Really? Know, so they would say like, Goss, you know what? You don't want any of this. Just get out of here.
You ain't hanging out with us today. Go home. And they wouldn't tell me, but it was like understood. Like, I can't, you know, I can't get in trouble because they got to handle what they got to handle, but they want something better for me. So like, you know, I always saw those things and like, it made me understand that there is a humanity behind those, behind them and what they have to do, and an understanding of like, this is a necessity, not a want. You know, that they're going through. So that's why, like, you know, when, like, you know, you hear my stories, like, I'm in those neighborhoods, but the parts that I remember are always beautiful to me. Like, they're family-oriented stories. Like, that stuff is like, background. But the actual thing, the stories are usually about, like, me and my cousin or me and my dad or whatever. Because that's how I still hold to those things.
Well, I feel like there's so many times, I mean, especially in whatever now in the media, they portray like New York as like it's anarchy here. Everything's crazy. You know, all this stuff's going nuts. But it sounds like, you know, what you're saying is, you know, there's all these elements and they're trying to make do with what they got. And they're looking out for the community. So they're not I would imagine these drug dealers, like, they live in your community. Right. So they're responsible to the community in some way. Right.
Yeah. And just being frank, they were more available. You know, right. Like, they were responsible. They were there. To your point, they lived there. So, like, you know, when something was wrong on my block, like, my dad could call the cops, you know, or we could, like, he could talk man to man with the guy next door, you know. So, like, which one is going to be more realistically, like, take the time to respond to you and talk to you and, you know, take you at face value of what you're saying. So, yeah, like, those interactions and that. Accessibility made me view them differently very quickly, you know, and not to say that, you know, I'm not trying to paint a picture like all lovely, ambitious,
beautiful drug dealers.
Like, you know, don't aspire to it, you know, there's definitely like, you know, obviously just like in everything else and obviously in that line of work, there's definitely bad people that do it. I'm just saying that the majority of people that I saw in that, I would equate to like the equivalent of like warehouse or like factory worker. Like, it's just the job that they had to do and it was the easiest one to get. So yeah, you a kingpin, that's different. You probably grimy, like realistically. I don't know, you don't get to that level. But if you just on the block, more than likely you just a dude trying to pay bills.
Did you know that almost 40% of the United States is people of color, but medical research is 80 to 90% white?
That's crazy. Are you telling me that every time I read side effects on a bottle of pills or something like that, that is based on research only for white people, and they're not really thinking about my petite Japanese body?
That's right. They're not thinking about your tiny, tiny Japanese body, okay? This has serious consequences. In drug trials conducted primarily in the United States, Asians account for less than 2% of participants, but account for 6% of the U.S. population.
Listen, I'm not a scientist, but I know white people and Asian people, we have different bodies. For example, we got different earwax, and I know that makes a difference in my medication.
The All of Us research program is the largest and most diverse health resource ever and is representing all of those groups who have been left out of research in the past. People of color, seniors, rural areas, low income, LGBTQ, etc.
Representation is critical to ensuring that discoveries are inclusive and beneficial across populations. Why should I sign up? They are currently providing 10,000 Fitbits at no cost to select participants. Learn about traits like lactose intolerance, earwax, bitter taste perception, cilantro preference, caffeine sensitivity.
All of Us is free and you do not have to pay for your DNA results.
Be part of the largest health research project ever. All eligible adults over 18 living anywhere in the United States can join. Participation is power. Join to make a difference at joinallofus.org/AsianNotAsian. Rituals get results. You wouldn't skip leg day, would you? It's the same idea if you want better skin, hair, and overall health. That's why Hawthorne has made it easy to build and maintain a personal care ritual that helps you look, smell, and feel your best. Hawthorne is a premium grooming brand that tailors your personal care routine to your unique profile. First, you take their quiz. They ask me things like, what kind of things am I into? What kind of drinks do I like? And that kind of factors into the products that they give you. And I got these lovely deodorants because I'm a smelly boy, and that's what I've been using. It was actually really fun. The quiz was so fast. It was so quick. It was honestly fun, and that's a hard thing to come by in pandemic. At the end, I got an essential bundle with all the products tailored to my body type and lifestyle. The products I got were, I just told you I got the deodorant. Why are you asking me again? I got the deodorant and some shampoos. It's a good time. Hawthorne takes the risk out of shopping for personal care by giving you free shipping on your order and returns. If you don't like your products, they'll even retailer them for you based on your feedback. With high quality, self-care products tailored specifically to your needs from Hawthorne, looking your best has never been easier. Take Hawthorne's quiz today and get started on your personalized self-care routine by going to hawthorne.co and use promo code NOTASIAN to get 10% off your first purchase. That's HAWTHORNE.co. Promo code not Asian. Hawthorne.co, promo code not Asian. Yeah, well, that's kind of what we wanted to ask you about is, you know, you have this beautiful story about how, like, you came up in this very strong community. And I think you say several times that, you know, we looked you up on LinkedIn. My guy, you work for PepsiCo.
Oh, yeah.
Like, bro. You were working on consumer packaged goods, okay? You and I are PepsiCo brothers.
Were you in Purchase, New York? Is that where you commuted?
I worked first out of the Queens Depot and then for Frito-Lay. Then I worked out of the Bronx. But I serviced Purchase. I serviced, most notably, I serviced Greenwich, Connecticut, where, like, the PepsiCo CEO is at.
Right, right.
So, like, I dealt with a lot of those people. But in Purchase, I would probably go up maybe, like, 3 times a year.
So, like, you know, you got good grades, you got this job at a Fortune 500 company, and, like, you're making good money, and then, you know, you weren't happy, so you kind of dropped all that.
Yeah.
And started doing stand-up. And it's, like, in one way, you know, quote-unquote, like, made it out of the hood, and then economically, you kind of went back in.
Yeah,
because it's like, you left your Pepsi job, right?
I know.
Like,
hey, man, these drug dealers are going to be real disappointed. They're like, man, you became a comedian, bro?
Yeah, you had those grades, bro. What happened? A comedian? Like, what the hell?
What nerve are you, B? We invested in you.
Yeah.
Yo, real talk, man. Like, that's, like, the most fascinating thing to me about being, like, an immigrant here. Because, like, when I got real depressed working at PepsiCo. Like, when I was a salesperson, I enjoyed it. When I became a manager, the money was great, but I felt like the work-life balance wasn't what I wanted. I wasn't doing something I liked. And my numbers started suffering after, like, 7 years of doing really well there. And, you know, I literally just had, like, a 3-day period where I just called out, like, yeah, I'm not in it. Like, my head was off. And my wife noticed that I was, like, drawn back. I wasn't talking in the crib. So she calls my parents over and we have, like, a huge, like, heart to heart. And like, when I got promoted to manager, I remember taking a stand-up comedy class because I read in Inc. magazine that a bunch of CEOs took stand-up to get better at public speaking. So I did that, like, as a thing. I had fun. And a year later, this is happening. And she's like, yo, when's the last time you were happy? And, you know, I don't know why, but, like, just my gut reaction was, oh, the graduation class for that comedy class I took last year. She said, great, do that. Just start doing that more. So my dad and I, who, like, you know, my dad and my parents own a few other, like, properties, and I own my building. So they were like, yo, like, we got everything covered rent wise. You've done your job responsibly for the last 8 years. You paid your bills. You saved money. Take time off. So I quit my job and I took a whole year and I just did like a ton of mics. Mm-hmm. And then I hit up another friend of mine that was in sales and told him what I was doing. And he's like, yo, my sales team is trash. Come work for me. I'll let you leave anytime you have a show. Just, you know, come work for me because I need help in general. And it was a good like medium. And I did that for 4 years until I quit to do stand up full time. But yeah, like to your point, it was like an emotional thing. That's why I left. Like I didn't feel happy. But the toughest part for me was explaining that to my dad. Cause like he immigrates here, he busts his ass, him and my mom, like envision coming to this country for the future of their kid. They bust their ass. They own 18 rental units. They're the immigrant American dream. Yeah. And when they're picturing that, they're thinking, okay, we worked hard, blue collar shit. My kid is going to become a doctor or a financial wizard or whatever. And what they don't realize is that they're giving us the audacity to dream about weirder shit, you know, like they did all that. True. And now I had the freedom to think, oh, I don't even have to think about money. When I think about a job, primarily I could think about happiness.
Whoa, and shit.
Yeah. That's wild. So
they don't even think about that. Happiness doesn't exist in the old country. That's not a thing. You know?
Yeah. It's just, you work. So explaining that idea to my dad was tough. And I was like, you don't understand. Like, I know I make six figures here. Making $15,000 this year made me happier.
Right.
Like, that, like, he was so, like, frustrated with me. Like, that shit did not connect. So, yeah, we had, like, 3 years where, like, he let it go because he knew it was good for my mental health. But he was mad at me. Like, yo, this is insane. And then, thankfully, the first story that I did on TV is centralized around him. So like everyone in the neighborhood is like, yo, that was beautiful what your son said about you on TV. And he didn't even know I was on TV like that. Like, he knew I left the LA to do something. He's like, oh, that's one of those like stupid comedy things that you're gonna do at a bar, whatever.
Which, to be fair, was in a bar.
Such an accurate description of what we do.
That is correct. It just happened to be on TV. Yes.
Yeah. So like, you know, when like 15, 20 people in the hood started hitting them up, like, yo, your son did his thing on that TV. So you seen your son on Comedy Central? What's Comedy Central? Like, all of those convos is happening. Shit. So like after a while, he was like, okay, I see this is going somewhere. You still broke, but at least, you know, I understand what you're getting from it. So yeah, that was kind of like the challenge behind all of that movement, you know?
Like, we had a guest on here like a little bit ago who said something similar to what you were saying about, you know, you had the freedom to think about other things and happiness. You know, she was saying she's a Chinese immigrant, and she was saying her parents worked in restaurants her entire life, and she was like, they lived an ordinary life, so I refuse to live an ordinary life. Yeah. Like, they did that, so like I refuse to just be some person at a cube making 75k. Yeah. Like, I'm gonna be on TV, I'm gonna be in Hollywood.
Dude, because they deserve it. Like that for me, like I had to tell him. Yeah. He was like, you know, like, I find this, like, you know, he tells you, like, this is heartbreaking for me because this isn't what I wanted for you. And I had to tell him, I was like, you have to understand that the only way I can do honor by you is by doing this. You know, like,
damn,
you know, like, you gave me the opportunity to do something this crazy. And at worst, I can always fall back on the degree and a corporate job. I can still get that back. It'll take me 5 years to work my way back up. Whereas this is something I can only do now because all these things line up where you're still healthy enough to like spend time with my kids. I'm young enough where like I could recover. We both worked together to buy these properties, like all of those things lined up. So that's what you worked for, is for me to have this shot. And it's my job to gamble on that. You know, it's my job to actually like try that. And then I turned it on him. I was like, you know, I would imagine that while you're seeing this is crazy, Grandpa saw you's crazy. He's like, yo, I got the farm and DR killing it, and you talking about buying buildings in New York. Like, he thought you was out of your mind. You know, it's the same thing, you know? You talking about moving to another country, you don't know the language, and you're going to open a bodega to sell food and buy a property. Like, that sounded insane to him. So, like, it's the same idea.
I agree. I mean, I always think about, you know, if my parents were you know, on my case about that. I mean, shit, my mom moved here, you know, when she was in her early 20s and was like, you know what, I'm going to go to college, which is like not a thing. I'm going to go to college in another country. And actually, this is a country that is like it kind of occupying my country. So like it's just like this crazy another level. You know what I'm saying? Can you imagine? It's just like, yo, I'm going to move to another, you know, it's just it like shit. Stand up seems normal. That seems like a basic. I just live at, you know, I just do and tell jokes. I'm even moved to this other country that's like carpet bombing us. So I know it's more complicated than that. Don't at me, everybody.
First time I'm on the show, we're gonna get canceled because of Mike. You see this, man?
This is what I do. Yeah, so I got this from BuzzFeed, but BuzzFeed News, but I think that this is, you know, happening to this has been happening for a while, but the article headline is young Vietnamese Americans say their parents are falling prey to conspiracy videos. And what's happening is older Vietnamese folks, you know, our parents' age are, you know, there's like content that's spreading all that's in Vietnamese. It's Vietnamese language content that they're getting on YouTube, they're getting it on Facebook or whatever. And it's like, this is like full of misinformation, just like all sorts of crazy things about the vaccine or about, you know, politics or what have you. And the parents are just watching it all the time. And you know, the article goes on and kind of discusses about, you know, what that can be like, what's the dynamic there, you know, trying to reach your parents. I know, I feel when I read this again, I was never surprised about this because, you know, we've talked about a lot, Vietnamese people, we lean right, you know, where many older Vietnamese people are Republican. And it's just kind of a slippery slope where they, you know, my parents, even very recently, you know, they've kind of mellowed out in their as they're getting a little, as they retired. But, you know, they used to love Fox News, man. We watched Fox News all the time, like constantly on TV. And this is like, you know, way after I was out of college already and I was like at home with them and I would just be sitting there unemployed watching them watch Fox News. And so I don't think it's a big jump because then the Vietnamese language media that's out in Orange County, you know, there's like local media, there's like local, you know, AM radio that's all in Vietnamese. And, you know, this is a lot of times it's like talk radio-esque, right? So it's going to lean right. And it makes complete sense to me that, you know, the next iteration of this would be these kind of like conspiracy video things, you know? And I wanted to talk to Gastor about this. I don't know if this is a similar dynamic with your community as well, like as far as, you know, where are your parents getting their information from? Are they getting some things which are, you know, could be questionable or whatever? I don't know. Just wanted to hear what you thought of it.
Yeah, man. I would say there's quite a bit of that. In my opinion, like even more scary directly on the Spanish networks. Mm. Like if you watch like Univision and Telemundo, they have a big portion of their mid evening programming dedicated to these like news essay type shows that only explore like extreme things that like they'll admit themselves aren't factual, but they'll say possible, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So like, my mom blew my mind because my parents have like a big gap between me and my siblings. So like I got a 20-year-old brother, right? So like my brother and my mom the same week were both trying to tell me about Dr. Sebi, you know, and how he solved cancer. So like my mom found out about it on Univision from some article. They decided to do in an essay. My brother is telling me about it because of Nipsey Hussle. You know?
Yep.
So,
yep.
Like, I'm like, all right, I can't argue with both of y'all. Get your vaccines. All right, Dr. Seb. You know, like, I don't know what you want from me. But, like, yeah, there's definitely, like, a lot of misinformation that I think is spread in those places. And it's tough to argue because, being frank, like, I spend my whole day working on my kids and jokes. I'm not knowledgeable on every single detail of why these things are important or why this is correct. I just trust that, you know, that it is because of the source giving it to me. but they have just as much know-how to like argue against me, because I don't know how to prove, I don't got data, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know, like my brother was telling me, like with the vaccine stuff, for example, he was like, you know, how about the Johnson & Johnson? It was killing, they had to pause it because it was killing people. And I'm like, yeah, it killed, you know, one out of a million, and they paused it. He's like, yeah, one out of a million so far, you know?
Oh, right.
You know, how do I argue that? You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
What do I say back to that? So, like, I don't have the data. I don't know how that stuff is studied, but I trust the source, and I trust that they do certain work. So I feel like the work that we do, I think, is we've put in enough time to solidify the source, and then we kind of trust them to do the work from there. Whereas, you know, unfortunately, these like YouTube channels and certain like news outlets, they do a very good job of looking polished too. And, you know, if you didn't grow up with the internet, all those things look equally professional. So it's tough to kind of like, you know, explain that. I know I got to have a convo with my parents when I start getting a whole bunch of like weird emails, because they don't have their own emails. So anytime they look up something on Google, like they'll enter my email
as
the email. So like I start getting like crazy emails in my like inbox, like, yo, do you want the cure for cancer for $17.99? I was like, oh, I gotta go stop by the house. You know, I don't know what's going on.
But, Astor, dude, you're gonna be sending money to Nigeria soon, bro. I'm you gotta be careful.
I don't know what's going on over there, man. When I see some nonsense in my inbox, I know I got, my dad found some dude talking about like he could like put solar panels on your roof for less than your tax, your tax return. And I was like, yo, you get like $3,000 back. There's no way that dude is putting solar panels on like 3,000 square foot. Like, yeah, it's insane. Like, it doesn't add up, you know, like the map is wrong. Solar panels cost like $80,000-$90,000, and he put them in like billionaire houses in LA. You know, that's not coming to East New York tomorrow. All right. But yeah, it's scary to see that people are sharing that kind of information. And I'm always curious, like, I'm curious from y'all perspective, do you think that, like, the people sharing that information are doing it out of malice? Like, that's what I'm like, I could almost be okay with it if I knew that, like, they were also misinformed and it was just a matter of, do I have to convince you?
I think like there's two things. You were talking about trusting the news source. For a lot of diaspora communities, because of the language barrier, you know, it's not just Vietnamese people. I remember my parents used to like pay extra to get Japanese news because they couldn't understand CNN or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's the same thing happening for Mike's parents and older, and, you know, the whole article is about how young Vietnamese people are like troubled about how their parents are being kind of misled. And the article said they trust it because it's on YouTube. They're like, oh, YouTube, it's a, you know, Silicon Valley company, and like it's, you know, associated with Google, and so of course it's true. They don't realize that like any stupid asshole could post anything on there. But I feel that this is the same thing that, like, you know, Jordan Peterson does, and what the fuck is his name? Ben, the conservative guy,
Joe Ben Rogan. Shapiro.
It's the same thing.
And
what's his name? Like, Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson like does not give a fuck about what happens.
He's
got money. He's just saying, like, there's these people know that these older Asian people are vulnerable and they're kind of like directionless, and like they can take advantage of this emotion, this sentiment. And I mean, maybe there's some people who kind of believe it, but like one of the things that was written in an article said that this one of the YouTube channels is claiming that COVID-19 can be cured with vitamins and oranges,
which, by the way, is so Vietnamese. It's just like Vietnamese people when like oranges, to everything, oranges. Like, oh, you know, be sure to eat a lot of persimmons. Really,
listen,
that's, you know.
That's the guy who's in his YouTube channel, he probably works for Sunkist or something, right? I'm telling you, it's all connected. I mean, that's the kind of conspiracy I believe in.
I feel that it could be, I think it could be mixed. I feel that, and maybe I'm not giving enough credit to these conspiracy theorists, Vietnamese people, but I'm just trying to imagine like my parents who are smart. My parents went to college in America. You know, I have aunts and uncles. They're engineers. You know, they're smart people. But I think if you could easily end up in a place where if you ask certain questions and then not question the answer, you'll just end up in this loop, especially on the internet, right? Where it's just you're suddenly in this thing that's just reinforcing how much you think. Because if you're sort of like, I don't know if COVID, I don't know if the vaccine is safe, right? If you start with that question and you go in and you ask it as a Vietnamese person, you're going to find Vietnamese sources that reinforce that. And they might not even say it out loud where it's like, don't take it. They just might ask the question. Right. And then you're suddenly reinforcing yourself. And then you might end up to a place where somebody is going to go and really say, oh, yeah, you can have oranges or some shit like that. But I think even if you're a reasonable person, you could, because of how Google is, how YouTube is, you know, I mean, how many times have we gone on to Twitter and we get into like some weird Twitter a person who is, you know, is just reinforcing the thing that you're looking for and will knows how to kind of hook you into these things, you know. So I think that, you know, all of these lies, I guess you could say, which they are things which have been said again and again for Vietnamese people. So Vietnamese people really are afraid of communism. If I were a Vietnamese communication strategist for the Democratic Party, I would say you can never, ever say socialism or communism. Never say it. I don't care if it is like, you know, you can never even spin it like that. It has to be something else. You can't even call it collectivism because Vietnamese people, we are allergic to that. And the same thing with when you talk about China, okay, Vietnamese people have this whole thing about China. Whether it's right or wrong, it's a trigger for them. It's the same trigger warning as if you talk to me about Alaskan pipelines, you know, I'm going to start getting upset, you know? That's my thing, right? And it just gets me emotional, and it gets Vietnamese people emotional too. So again, I think you could be a reasonable person but be wound up with certain keywords that all of a sudden you're, you know, abortion. That's a big one. Vietnamese people, a lot of us are Catholic. You know, I don't know how it is with, you know, the Dominican community, but you throw that in there, it could be totally wrong, but you're so emotionally latched onto the word, that concept of abortion, that you don't even want to touch it. You don't even want to take the risk. You know what I'm saying? So that's sort of what you have to play against. You know, I think a lot of times, Gastor, you were talking about, you know, I don't have the facts. This isn't about facts. You know, this is about feeling.
Guys talking about oranges, man.
Yes, exactly. What are the things that are scary? What are the things that are scary, right? Abortion, China, communism. What are the things that make you feel good? Oranges. I swear to fucking God. Tell me I'm wrong. This is the war we're fighting. We're fighting an emotional war. So you have to go in there, right? And you have to be like, hey, man, you know what the vaccine's made of? Oranges.
Oranges, baby.
Yo, get that orange vaccine, baby. And they'd be like, what? That's tight. I love the oranges. I love oranges. Yeah, man, it's full of persimmons. That's how they made it.
So we would get like big Vietnamese buy-in if like, yo, Tropicana, new vaccine. We out here, baby.
Listen, no one has tried it yet, and I don't see why it wouldn't work. Because this is what we're fighting. We're fighting an emotional war against this. These sorts of things.
Yeah. It's like dose one, no pulp. Dose two, with pulp.
With pulp.
Like, I'm down.
Yo, I'm
get
down.
It. Get it.
Oh God, I was just talking about this with my homie. Like at the corner store on God, the day after the Johnson & Johnson joint got shut down, I was hearing like a hood convo about it. And like this dude was like, nah, dude, they getting the blood clot because the Johnson & Johnson's only one dose because it's thicker. You know what I mean? If they would die,
that's what I'm saying.
Good.
It's not science. It's not science.
It's not.
It's thicker.
It's not, you know, about facts, you know?
Oh, man. My favorite part, though, of that article was like they thought it wasn't going to work because it was only effective for white males because they use male fetuses. And like, you know, a young lady was complaining. Shit. That, you know, her mom was starting to believe that. And, like, I love the idea that, like, to her mom, the mom was like, yeah, white people are that evil. They would use they would get fetuses. Yeah, that lines up, you know?
Yes, this makes sense.
Yeah, this makes sense.
This adds up. Yep, they would do that.
Well, Gastor, thank you so much for coming on. This is amazing, an amazing conversation. Where can our fans find you and your work?
Yeah, man. You can find me on all social medias at Gastor Almonte, GASTORALMONTE. And you can listen to my podcast every week. It's called The War Report, hosted by myself and the homie Chalet with Sharp. Yeah, it's like this with black people, basically.
Check it out. It's also known as Black Not Black. Check that out. You can also find us on all the social media platforms at Asian Not Asian Pod. I am also on there at The Fumiabe. That's TheFumiabe.
And you can find me on Instagram at Nice Pants Bro.
Please come to our Zoom Hack City comedy show, or sorry, Zoom stand-up comedy show that we do every other week called Hack City. The next one will be April 30th, and the one after that is May 14th. Gastor's done it a bunch of times, and honestly, we're still going strong. If you ever want to do it again, man, just hit us up, dude. Happy to have you, man.
Love to do it, man. Always rock with y'all.
Hell yeah. As always, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/asian.asianpod. iTunes people, please leave a review. And Mike, I think that's it, right? All right, we'll see you next week. Bye.